Okay, today is Wednesday, June 21st. This is the Women's Chumash Shir. We're up to the end of Bereshit, Perek Yud Dalet. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to the end of Perek Yud Dalet of Sefer Bereshit. We read the last section of the Perek last week, made a couple of observations, and I just want to try to conclude it and perhaps begin Perek Tedvav, which is directly connected to it. So, beginning in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, in Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the Torah reported, after interrupting Melech Sdom's approach to Avram, Melech Sdom, one of the kings who was assisted by Avram against Kedor LaOmer and his gang who had attacked. Now the Torah picks up and tells us, after the Torah tells us that Melech Sdom approached Avram, it interrupted that little episode, told us something about Malki Tzedek, and now the Torah resumed to Melech Sdom. Melech Sdom said, "Tainli hanefesh v'harachush kachloch. You please give me all of the captives who you may have redeemed from the war, and all of the booty you can keep." Avram said to the king of Sdom, "Harimosi yadi el Hashem el Elyon." So we gave three or four interpretations as to what Harimoti Yadi actually means. Is it an oath? Is it a prayer? Whatever it is, not going to go over it again. And he says, whatever it is, it's an oath or a prayer, that I will not take anything from a thread to a shoelace. And I'm not going to give you the privilege of saying, I made Avram wealthy. However, there is one thing, and this is the last pasuk, Rak asher achlu hane'arim, the only thing that I will take from you is the food cost of the lads who accompanied me, v'chelek ho'anashim asher holcho iti, and a portion for those people who came with me. We don't know exactly who that might refer to. Oner eshkol u'mamre heim yikhu chelkam. Oner, Eshkel, and Mamre will take their own chelek. Fine. So there are three groups of people here. Ne'arim, Anashim, Asher Holchu Iti, and Oner, Eshkel, u'Mamre. Three different groups of people. So let's start with Rashi, and then we'll proceed to Abarbanel. But we'll start with Rashi, as we always do. Rashi in Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Yeah. Hane'arim Avodai. Who are these Ne'arim, who he is referring to, these young lads? His slaves. Now, that is documented in the text, that his servants participated in the battle. If you flip back for 1 second to Pasuk Tetvav, it says, Vayechalek Alehem Laila, Hu Va'avadav Vayake. We know that there were 318 people. The text itself tells us there were 318 people, and they are defined as Yilidei Beito, the people who've grown up in his household. In the next pasuk, they're defined as his servants. That's who they were. There weren't any other people who grew up in Avram's household because he doesn't have any children as yet. So who are the people who grew up in his house? His servants, his staff. So they are the ones who actually participate in battle, as it says, black on blue. That Vayechalek Alehem Laila, Hu Va'avadav. Then there is a second category of individuals. V'chelek ha'anashim asher halchu iti. Rashi chooses to ignore it and does not establish a second category of people who might have joined Avram for the battle. We don't know who this group is. We know who the Ne'arim are, the young lads.
Is Peleg some of the booty or some of the people?
Some of the booty.
The
Chelek for the portion of those who came with me. Right. So, who are these people? Not quite sure. Yes?
Is that Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre defining Itim or defining Hay?
Good. Rashi will say that Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre are not to be associated with the previous phrase, only with the following phrase. Aner Eshkol Umamre, that's what Rashi continues. V'aner v'chaveirav, line 3 of the Rashi, yashvu al hakelim lishmor, afilu hachi yikheim yikhu chelka. Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre did not participate in battle. What did they do? They stayed home and watched everybody's property. They were home watchers. Now, for staying home and watching and protecting the property, they deserve something. So Avram tells Melech Stone, you know what? I'm willing. Here is Rashi's point. And he emphasizes, the Torah doesn't say that Avram is asking Sodom, please give me a portion on their behalf. What does it say? Heimikhu chelkam. They are distinguished individuals. They don't need me as an intermediary. They'll come and they'll pick out whatever they want. So here's what's happening in this particular pasuk. Avram is asking for the cost of the food of his ne'arim, and he's asking for a reward, v'chelek, for the anashim ashahu chuiti. Now that could very well be a repetition of the 317 slaves or 18 slaves who came with him. I want two things. I want to be personally reimbursed for my cost of the food, and I want them to get rewarded for participating in battle. So it doesn't have to represent a separate category, but it's a separate request. Request number one is to be reimbursed me. I want to be reimbursed for food. Request number two is I want you, Melech Stone, to give them something from the booty, which I have returned to you. I've given you back everything. Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre are to pick out their own little gift. That's not for me. They don't have to have me as an intermediary on their behalf. That's how Rashi learns this particular little episode. Now, Rashi doesn't really tell us, how does he know that Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre did not actually participate in battle? Where in the text does it actually indicate that they were house watchers? So if you look at the previous text when they were mentioned, look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Rashi does it by default, not with an explicit text. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Torah tells us that whoever this palit, this person who ran away from the battle, told Avram, v'hu shochein be'elonei mamreha emori, he, Avram, at that time was residing in the plains of Mamre, who was Achi Eshkol v'Achi Aner, v'heim ba'alei brit Avraham. They established a working relationship with Avraham. What is the working relationship? We have no clue what it is. Apparently it was simply to give him permission to live, and it's like a NATO agreement.
Allies,
exactly. They were allies. They decided to protect one another. And But it doesn't say any place that they accompanied him into war, because the Torah goes out of its way to say that the only ones who engaged in battle was Avram and the 318 young lads. That's it. Nobody else came. So what in the world do they deserve reward for if they didn't go to battle? Hence, they watched the house. They watched the house. And Rashi will quote another episode in Tanakh where David will offer reward again for those people who serve as home protectors. Home protectors. Yeah. If you take your sheets now for a second, if you'll go for a second, just for a second, to page... Okay, flipped over on the top. Go to page 3. It's the back of page 4. It's flipped over. Okay. Now, this particular responsa has nothing to do with the text that we're learning, but he cites our pasuk as a basis for a very controversial issue that is raging today in Medinat Yisrael. He cites this pasuk to weigh in on an issue that is currently a heated issue in Medinat Yisrael. And I bracketed the relevant issue. And the question is, should women be participating in Tzava Hagana LeYisrael, in the Israeli army, or not? Should they participate?
Bichlal or in combat?
Okay, that's what he's going to talk about. That's what the debate is today. So more and more women are now joining the army. In fact, in last week's Israel report, there was a whole article, I think, from Ma'ariv that said the number of women, Haredi women, who are not joining normally the normal way of religious exemption by doing Sheirut Lumi, they're actually going to the army. And the numbers are becoming so large that they're going to have to create a Nachal Haredi component, paralleling the men's Nachal Haredi unit. That's how many women are actually looking to become regular. Israel has never sent women yet to the front lines, but they're training at, hopefully they'll never have to, but they are training in them. So here is the issue which is debated. Vihine yesh lahashiv al zev lodami lahatam. Forget about what is. Debishla masham ein lonu limud al zed nashim la bnei milchama ninhu ela svara ba'almahu. There is absolutely no source to indicate that women are not part and parcel of the army in Israel. There is no pasuk that says they're not allowed to. There is a drash based on the following, where it says, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Ish darko lichbosh, ve'ein isha darka lichbosh. It's not customary, says the Gemara, that a woman would engage in conquest, lichbosh, conquest. Men engage in conquest. So, okay, that's your opinion. It's probably a social phenomena that did exist historically, probably not only within Am Yisrael, but in most societies, women did not participate in battle. But it's not a halachic precept that says they're exempt or they're not allowed to. It doesn't say that any place. Yeah. Umitzar hasvara ein lipotram. Even if you want to say that this logic is accurate, and here comes, and I'm not going to elaborate, but there are certain sociological statements made in the Talmud, and the question is, are they quoted as only a sociological statement, and therefore they are subject to change in the generation? Or do we establish a halachic premise from that sociological statement? I'm going to give you the most famous statement in the Talmud, which is a sociological statement, and many read it halacha. It's a statement made by Reish Lakish, a Talmud Yerushalmi, 3rd century scholar. It's never found in the Mishnah. It's not found in the... It's quoted in the Bavli, but its origin is in the Yerushalmi. Tav lemeitan du milemeisav armalata. That it... Women would rather get married under all circumstances, rather than live alone. That's what the Talmud says. The question is this a sociological phenomenon, or is the halacha trying to read into it halachic implications? Halachic implications. There are many such statements about halachic implications. To namely, whether we should recognize certain situations where a husband is treating his wife inappropriately and Beis Din should coerce him to give a get. So some say, yeah, maybe in the cases of the Talmud, yes, but not any other. Why? And they quote this psychological principle and say, under those circumstances, no. So, I don't want to debate the merits of the case. I just want to show you an illustration. This is another one where it's not a halachic principle that says women are not allowed to serve. In fact, there is a halachic statement which indicates that they are certainly permitted and perhaps even obligated to observe. The Gemara says, when the Torah describes at the end of Parshat Shoftim three categories of people who are exempt from military service, do you remember them for military service? Who is exempt? A newly married person, v'simach et ishto, yeah. Someone who's afraid, someone who just built a house and things like that. Good. All of those things. Good. Says the Gemara in Sota, all of those exemptions are all only for a milchemet reshut, an optional war. What is an optional war? A war waged by the Israeli government to expand its territory, to expand its tax base. But for milchemet mitzvah, and you can write this down, it's black on white, afilu chatan mechupata, vikala mechupata yotzin la milchama. Where it's a mechemet mitzvah, if you take a chasan and kala from the chuppah, straight, give him a uniform, change your outfit, take off the gown, and put on a uniform and go fight. That's what it says. And today, every battle in Medinat Yisrael is mechemet mitzvah. Because, number one, it enables Eretz Yisrael to be under Jewish control. That's one milchemet mitzvah. And a second milchemet mitzvah is to protect every Jew in the world if there is somebody who wants to eliminate them. And the other one is to kill Amalek. Okay, so we don't know who Amalek... whatever Amalek is. Hamas is Amalek. You know, Hezbollah is Amalek. But forget about that. So it's a milchemet mitzvah. And women are obligated to participate as well. So here he writes, maybe I'll grant you that that they would be exempt from military service due to the fact that there is this sociological phenomenon, e ish darko lichbosh, a man is engaged in conquest, the ein isha darko lichbosh. Ma she'ein kein, la'azor l'ha'anashim bidvarim she'heim tifelim la'milchama, but to participate in the war effort for that which is considered assistance, kigon l'takein ma'achal, to prepare food for the soldiers, u'kayotzebo la'anshei ha'milchama, Ukilgon lishmor hakelim, to watch things at home, to be on guard locally, to serve as a local patrol. Ukidepiresh Rashi parshas lech lecha al hapasuk aner eshkol umamre heim yikhu lahem heim yikhu chelkam de magiem lemchelik mishlal hamilchama mishum deze tzorech lamilchama umize ein svara liftor hanashim. So he writes this for today, that if there is a war effort going on, and unfortunately there's constantly a war effort going on, doesn't mean you need a full-out 1967 six-day war. As long as we're not living in peace, there has to be. So for support effort, it's perfectly appropriate to draft women in this regard, even to draft women in this regard. Because there is absolutely no reason for it whatsoever, and the debate only centers then how far you want to extend that. Is it only for ancillary support, or does it even mean that we can train them for military combat, and we should train them for military combat, because God forbid, if we need them, they'll have to go out for that as well. That's the debate raging today. Yes?
What about the part that says that
okay, good. That is one of the arguments which anti-women in the army cite. That pasuk found in Parshat Ki Tetzeh is not the simple pshat. It happens to be Yonatan ben Uziel, the Targum, he gives the illustration. That what does it mean that a woman should not be man's garb, not to wear military equipment? That he uses that. And of course they cite it. Okay, fine. But that doesn't explain why you can't do, you know, support work. You don't have to wear a uniform to wear support work. And as I said, the overwhelming majority of commentaries do not interpret that particular pasuk in that fashion. They interpret the pasuk as a woman, there's a man's and a woman's collar related to that pasuk. A man should not dress up as a woman for the purpose of gaining entree into a place which is reserved only for women, like a women's bathroom. And a woman should not dress up as a man to gain entree into a place reserved exclusively for men. That's the simple pshat of the pasuk. Not that she shouldn't be wearing a shield and carry a sword. That's not what it is. But you're right, Yonatan ben Uziel does cite it. Correct. But who are the others? Who are they? That's the question, is who are they?
I don't know, but they're more of a volunteer.
That would be correct. It is no doubt. But where it said that they actually fought, Vayakem, it only mentions two people. Who? V'avadav. That's all it says. So that's why I'm struggling to see who are these people. I agree with you. It looks like a separate category. That's why I introduced them. Yes. But I don't know who they are. Not sure who they are. Yes, yeah, that's true. Last week, yes. And there was just in the news today that Jason Greenblatt went to be Menachem Avil today to the family. Yeah. Yeah. Her name was Malka. Her last name was Malka. Yeah, she was stabbed. Yeah. Okay, so now go to page number 1 and we'll see Abarbanel's reaction to Rashi. Anybody who's ever handled the Abarbanel knows that he can't control himself in terms of how much he writes. It's like pages and pages and pages. Abarbanel, the finance minister of Spain. That's what he was. Dan Yitzchak Abarbanel. Abel ha'emetu ki aner Eshkol u'mamre lo holchu im Avraham la milchama. They did not participate in Mount. And this he agrees with Rashi. Ki hakatuv me'id, the Torah itself states, vayicholek alehem laila, hu va'avadav vayakein. V'ze yoreh, this informs us, shelo hayu imo b'lmechama, ki im avadav, only his servants, lo aner eshkol u'mamre, shehem ba'alei burito, they are individuals with whom Avram established a relationship with, v'lo avadav, but not his servants. Kamosha katuv b'tchilat ha-sipur, as it is indicated at the beginning of the story, vayavo ha-palit, vayaged le'Avraham ha-ivri, v'hu shochein be'elonei mamre ha-mori, achi eshkol v'achi aner, v'heim ba'alei brit Avraham. Lehodia shahaya shachein etzlam, that Avram lived with them, v'nish'ar beito umiknehu etzlam b'shmiratam. His house and his cattle were left over in their watch. Lo sheholchu imo lamilchama. Uleze amar hakatuv acharav vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv vayorek et chanichav. Vayorek, he armed chanichav. That's what the text said. Who are these chanichav? Vihine yelidei beito heim b'nei amahotav v'ne'arav. The b'nei beito are the children of what? Of his servants. V'chanichav heim ha'anashim haskirim shahayu b'beito la'asot melachto. The gardener, the what? The painter. Whatever servicemen Avram needed, and he had to pay them. These were not his servants. Those are the chanichav. And what do you think Abarbanel is now going to say? What do you think in our pasuk that Abarbanel is now going to say? No? Come on. But who are, which phrase in the pasuk refer, what is it, what pasuk in the phrase refer to these people? What? Hane'arim, what? Asher holchoiti? Hanash, what does it say? Ha'anashim. The people who went with him. So we mentioned that Rashi ignored it completely. Who is this? Who are these people who are entitled to a reward?
Rashi didn't ignore it, he said the
ode. No, no, the ode is the... Where does Rashi say? No, the ode is oneru mamne. The ode means, and now I'm going to explain what the role of oneru mash oner eshkelu mamre is. No. That's not what it means. That's not the way Rashi used the word va'od. So Abarbanel now says, I'm going to explain. There were three groups of people here. There were the slaves who were coerced into going into battle because they were slaves. Then there are other people who Avram asked to join him, perhaps even paid them. In fact, he says, he uses the word sichirim. What do we call those people? Mercenaries. People who are hired to go to battle. That's all. They have no interest in this battle, but they're getting paid, so they do it. But because they decided to join, even at a fee, he decided that they're entitled to a reward. And then, Oner Eshkalu Mamre is the third group who will take a reward simply for offering protection within the framework of the house. That's how Abarbanel interprets this. Yeah. And he elaborates on this a little long, but let's move on. Okay. So, and apparently Melech Sdom does not object. The Torah doesn't say anything. We assume he followed his command, and Avram takes absolutely nothing. Everybody else who participates with him is rewarded appropriately. Torah continues the story. Achar hadvarim ha'ele. Now, whenever you have a phrase acharei hadvarim ha'ele or achar hadvarim ha'ele, you have to assume, even though Rashi is going to say not that way, both of them indicate that although we're going on to another topic, another issue, there's got to be some connection between the following and that which we've just described. How do I know that? I tell you that. How would I know that? Why would I make such a statement? That whenever... Yes, why would I make such a statement? What? No. The psicha is something else. Here it's a stuma. It's a stuma. Yes, it's not a completely new line. It's just a gap of... it's nine letters. The next topic is Achar Dvar Me'ela. Yeah?
Because basically the Torah is in chronological order. So it's not to tell you it comes next. It's always coming next.
Good. So exactly. If the next topic has nothing to do with the previous topic, just start the topic. Why do I have to say Acharei HaDvar Me'ela? It's obviously it took place after this because... But that's an enormous assumption that the Torah is in chronological order. Right? And the only one of the major commentaries who believes that is the Ramban. Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and 99% of all others believe Ein Mukdam Umeuchar BaTorah. But even if you were to operate with that, I still agree with you. That even if there is no chronological order, whatever the next topic is, whenever it happens, if it has nothing to do with the previous topic, you don't have to start with Achar HaDvarim Le'ele. You don't have to. Either way. So the phrase is there to indicate that although this seems to be another topic, there is some connection to the previous topic. However, Rashi doesn't agree with me. Because Rashi is going to be troubled why sometimes does it say Achar and sometimes it says Acharei. For example, a famous one from Rosh Hashanah. The reading of the Torah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So if you'll go for 1 second to the very end of chapter 22 of Sefer Bereishis. 22. Chapter 22 is the dramatic story of Akedat Yitzchak. It ends in verse 19. Vayashav Avraham el Ne'arav. Avram returned to all of his gang who accompanied, because don't forget at the beginning of the unit, he tells them, Shvu lachem porim achamor va'ani va'hanar ne'achad ko. So now he returns. Vayakumu vayelchu yachta v'bashava. Everybody went home. Very nice. Unit's over. Now the Torah writes, "Vahi acharei hadvarim ha'ele, vayugad li Avraham leimor," that he's got lots of nephews and cousins and all kinds of things. Very nice. And that's what the Torah ends. So here, it doesn't seem to be that there is any connection. So Rashi claims, why does it say, "Vahi acharei hadvarim ha'ele," and not "Vahi achar hadvarim ha'ele"? Because it's not connected. Go back to our Rashi for a second. Rashi writes that in Pasuk Tetvav, in his opening comment. Kol makom shene'emar achar samuch. It is somehow connected to the previous issue. Acharei muflag. Maza muflag? It's distant. It's got nothing to do with it. That's how Rashi interprets it. The Rav disagreed with Rashi and used the example of Vahi Acharei HaDvarim Ha'ele as the perfect illustration why he disagreed with Rashi. What happens in that particular last three pesukim? If you go back to the end of Chafbet for a second, sorry I troubled you. Go back to Pasuk Chafbet. Chapter 22, verse 20, 21, and 22. Well, what is the Torah report that's so important for us?
Rivka.
What?
Rivka, telling us that Rivka
good.
Will be born because...
Correct. Good. That's the standard interpretation. All of these people, Utz and Butz and this one, Kamuel and this one, we only want to know one thing. Ubisuel, Yaradik Rivka. Shmona, I'll tell you about all the others, but I want to have one piece of information. Besuel gave birth to Rivka. He didn't actually, it was his wife, but the Torah rarely identifies women in the text. Why, I don't know, but it doesn't. So that's the way most interpret it. And indeed, it has absolutely nothing to do with the previous topic. The Rav said no. The reason why the Torah reports this, and we specifically read it on Rosh Hashanah, we could have stopped the reading for Rosh Hashanah at Amath, right there. Because the important thing for us is not the birth of Rivka, the important thing for us is Akedas Yitzchak. That's one of the most important themes for the Yomim Noram. We mentioned all the Akedas Yitzchak Lezaro Hayom Berachamim Tizkor. It's the conclusion of the Brachav Zichronot, and it's mentioned in so many piyutim. So why do I read this? He said, because it's to design to show you the comparison of what happens to people when I engage in judgment. For some people, it's like nothing having lots of children. Utz and Butz and this one and that one. Shmona Eile Yolad. This guy had 8 children. No problem whatsoever. And Nebuch Avram had one child, and look what he had to go through to keep that child. Look at the difficulty. He just had to bring his son to the Akedah and put him on that Mizbeach without going into, we'll learn it in great detail when we do Parshas Vayera, so many different theories as to what the expectation was. Did he really know that Amalek was going to come and intervene? Or did he not know? Who knows? But let's learn for today the simple pshat. Avram had no idea that someone was going to intervene, and he is literally prepared to offer his son as a sacrifice. Okay, simple, like reading it in the third grade. That's what happened. So look, it's designed to highlight the contrast. So the editor of the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, throws this in as a means of comparison to what's happening in the previous unit. And it says, Vahi acharei, it's not achar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu by design wants it to know that some people are going to have life, fortunately for them, we have no understanding why, this is what's going to happen. But other people, unfortunately, are going to have to suffer as they go and struggle. Avram had to wait a very long time for this one particular child with Sarah. And this style of the Torah is abundantly evident in other situations as well, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the editor, sneaks something in to let the audience know, I want to show you guys are all wrong, or I want to show you by comparison what you think. Open up for 1 second, please, to chapter 37 and 38 of Sefer Bereishis. I just want to show you the technique. It's like a play. Chapter 37 of Sefer Bereishis begins a narrative that is uninterrupted until the end of the book in chapter 50, the close of Sefer Bereishis. Yosef is the favorite son of Yaakov. He's got his dreams. The brothers can't stand him. We know what happened. He is sold into to the Ishmaelim, who send him to the Egyptian. And the whole Shibud Mitzrayim starts. Everything follows exactly one after the other. There is not one interruption of the narrative, except chapter 38. You were there. I spoke about this.
Yeah.
on a chumash here. What? Vayera Yehuda. Chapter 38. Look at chapter 38. It has nothing to do with the narrative.
Except
nothing at all. And the reason why the editor put it in here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is because, and this is the way the Rav described it, make believe I'm an actor on stage. And I am chapter 37. So I'm chapter 37. I hear my son Yosef dreaming about royalty. My other children are angry. They want to kill him. But what about me? Pop, Yankala. Torah says, the brothers were jealous. Ve'aviv shamaret hadavar. He guarded it, anticipated, he wanted it to happen, because that was his plan. His plan was to make Yosef the king of Israel, because he was the eldest of his favorite wife, Rachel. And that's why he made him Iksonis Pasim. He made him that special garment of royalty, because he was going to be anointed as the king of Israel. So God in the background is, somebody comes on stage, I'm facing you, the audience, in the theater, and God puts on the stage about Yehuda. Something about Yehuda. And what is God telling us? He's laughing at me. You think Yosef's going to be the king? No. That's not what I have in mind. You know who's going to wind up to be the king? Yehuda. Yehuda's going to be the Melech. And at the end of the book, end of Sefer Bereishis, Yaakov has to admit it. Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda u'michokek mi bein raglav. Yaakov's last blessing is prophecy. So he has to acknowledge that he made a mistake and Yehuda's going to be the king. But from a literary point of view, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in this story about Yehuda. It's got nothing to do with the rest of the narrative about Yosef going into slavery or anything. It's got nothing to do with it. Why? Because the editor of the Torah uses sometimes events that have nothing to do with the story, with the narrative, simply to what? To let us know something that I want you to know. Because after the episode of the Akedah, if you were to skip those four psukim, what's the next parsha after Vayera? Come on, you know this. Don't look! Come on, you know this, testing your little kids. Chayesara. Vayu Chayesara. Chayesara dies. The Medrash claims she dies when she found out about Akedas Yitzchak. It's hard to understand that Avram didn't say anything. But anyhow, that's the continuation of the narrative, not these four psukim. Yes.
Is there a difference between, I hear you saying the difference between Achar and Achare?
That's Rashi, yeah.
What about if there's a difference if there's a Vayehi or if there's no Vayehi? Because in our parsha does not say Vayehi, it just says Achar Vayehi.
Right.
And in Vayera Kafet,
it says Vayehi.
It says Vayehi Achar Hadar.
Correct.
And at the end it says Vayehi Achare Hadar.
Correct.
Three different ways.
Right. So normally, whenever it says Vayehi, Chazal note that it means Tzara. Vayehi, Bimei Achashverosh, as opposed to Vehaya. Vehaya ki tavo, that lashon simcha. Even though they mean the exact same. That's what Chazal note. Here, in our pasuk, it doesn't say anything. So, that's point number one. Now back to our text, in the beginning of Perek Tedvav. Achar hadvarim ha'ele. So, Rashi believes that since it says achar, it's going to be connected to the past. Okay?
It's going to be connected to what?
To what? To the episode we just learned. Haya divar Hashem el Avram. After this episode, God speaks to Avram. Bamachazeh, in a vision. It's not that he comes and speaks to him like God speaks to Moshe, but as typically took place in a vision, saying the following: Al tira Avram, Abe, you got nothing to worry about. Anochi magen lach, I am your protector. Sircharcha harbe ma'od. Your reward is going to be great. Okay. Let's stop right there before we analyze Avram's reaction to this. Let's start with Rashi, as we always do. Rashi in the second Achar Hadvarim O'Eile, in Pasuk Tetva, Parak Tetva, Pasuk Aleph. Achar Shena'ase Lo Neis Zeh, Shaharag Et HaMalachim. After Avram experienced this miracle that the kings were defeated, Hayad Do'eg Ve'omer. Avram was afraid and he said to himself the following: Shema Kibalti Sachar Al Kotzit Kotai. Perhaps I used up all of my credits, all of my merits through this particular battle. Likach Amar Lo HaMakom. Therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Al Tira Avram, Anachi Magen Lach. Avram, don't be afraid. I am your protector. Not in the past, but in the future. Min Ha'onesh, from any punishment, Shelo Te'onesh Al Kol Otan Nifashot Sheharagta. You will not be punished on account of any of the what? People who you killed. Uma sha'ata do'eg al kibul sechar'cha, and that which you worried that you used up all of your merits, I address and I say, sechar'cha harbe ma'od. You got plenty of reward, plenty of more points stored up. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah. You still owe something. In other words, it's not sufficient.
Good.
You still kill somebody.
Now, further elaborate on something that is a point of contention today, which we get, which Medinat Yisrael is the only world getting criticized for.
Yes.
What? The what?
The soldiers
and
the terrorists.
No. The residual effect. The residual effect.
Oh, wow.
You want to take out a terrorist is driving in a car, yep. And he's got three kids with him. Mm-hmm. And the army says, we're taking him out. And what happens? The three kids die too. The three kids died out. So I once heard a most powerful lecture by a Rosh Yeshiva of one of the Hesde Yeshivot, not a popular one for Americans, Rabbi Yuval Shurlo, who is a prominent Rosh Yeshiva and very big philosopher and writer. He is a member of the Tzva Hagana Lisrael Ethics Committee. And every single time a mission is undertaken by Tzahal, they go through the Ethics Committee to see whether it is morally and ethically appropriate to take out those three kids together with this terrorist. Every single time. It just doesn't happen that the military plans it and they implement it. They have to go through this committee, and obviously if there's no imminent danger, he's just riding a car to go to work or something, whatever it is. And that's something that we, of all nations, grapple with. You know, we grapple with the residual effect. Now, sometimes, you know, I would say that those kids are not, they're blameless. They're 3 years old, 4 years old, they don't know anything about the battle. They don't know anything about this person done. But that's what war is all about, unfortunately, with residual effects. But a soldier feels badly when he has to take a life that is not a direct threat to him. A moral, decent fellow will feel badly that he's snuffing out another human life. And that's what Avram feels like. You're 100% right. He feels badly that he has to take a life. Sometimes because it'll enable him to defend himself and his family. Other times it's just a residual effect. You throw a bomb, unfortunately, other people are going to get killed. Can't always limit it to that particular target. So that's point number one. And Avram really feels badly about doing it, and that perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a little more demanding than the chief of staff is demanding. We don't know. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes in and tells him, allays his fear, there is nothing to worry about at all. That's point one, just one second. Point number one. Point number two, do you know another famous example in Sefer Bereshit of somebody declaring, I used up all my merits already? Yaakov. Hatzileini na miyadachi miyad Esav by ki yarei anochi. I'm afraid. Pen yavo v'hikani emal banim. Perhaps he'll come and strike me. Why, says Rashi? Yaakov thinks he may have used up his merits. That's what tzaddikim always think. That they are undeserving of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's protection, especially when it's a miraculous protection. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu here tells him two things. Number one, I'm protecting you from punishment over the death of other people, even though they may have been innocent. Two, your reward is your reward is intact. You have nothing to worry about. Ladies and ladies, do you think that's the pshat of the phrase Anochi Magen Lach? And if not, what is the pshat? What's the pshat of Anochi Magen Lach? I agree with you. It is not. It is nothing to do with punishment for that. That's, so what's the simple pshat? So turn to page number four for a minute. Page number four. So you have on the bottom of the page two basically Pashtanim. The greatest Pashtan of them all, Rashbam. On the bottom of the page. Achar hadvarim ho'ele. Michubar al haparsha shelema Allah. It is definitely connected to the previous episode. Achar hadvarim ho'ele. Shaharag Avram hamilachim. Avram killed the five kings, or the four kings. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Tira Avram Min HaOmot. What does that mean? What about the revenge factor? When you lose in battle, the next thing is somebody's going to come and take revenge. Members of the family, you know, other political allies. So what is Anochei? He doesn't have to say it. We can fill. What does Anochei Magen Lach mean? Simple pshat. I'm going to protect you if they should come attack you. Nothing to worry about. So the simple pshat is Al Tira Avram. Not that you used up your merits. That's a nice, cute little drush idea. But the simple pshat is don't be afraid of the natural consequence of winning a war. People are going to come and attack. I will protect you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is echoed on the bottom of the page by Svarna. Al tira Avram, al tira shiyinakmu ha'arba milachim imcha. Don't be afraid if they are going to try to take revenge. There's nothing to worry about. I will protect you. What is that? That is correct. That is correct. That's correct. And in fact, that ends with a rebuke to the children, and we have nothing else in the text. Nothing else in the text. But, at the end of Yaakov's life, what does he do with Shimon and Levi? What does he do? He criticizes them, rebukes them harshly. So even though at the moment he was a little afraid about little revenge, he, at the time, what does he do? What does he do at the end of his life? He criticizes them. He does. Klechamas mecherosayim. Right away they go to war. So Yaakov is consistent. He was very much afraid of the reaction of the people of Shechem that they would come and take revenge. No doubt. Yeah.
But shouldn't he have had some moral indignation besides worrying about his own, about revenge from Shechem?
Who, Yaakov? Oh, we'll talk about that at the end of. We'll talk about it. Yeah.
But speaking of the resistance, residual
effects
in Eretz Yisrael, doesn't it also mean that you would look at as time goes by, at human life as disposable and not as precious as Hashem intended?
I can hear that. No doubt. Yeah. Now, continuing this idea, the Pshat says Svarno, if you want to just take a look at it on the top of page 5, where it says Svarno, I failed to bracket it, but on page 5, where it says Svarno, about a third of the way down, his first remark, Sicharcha, Lo dai shelo hitma'atu zichuyotecha bishval ma'asheheitzalticha. Not only have you what? Your merits not decreased. Aval imze yesh schar lepulatech. You're going to get rewarded for what you did. Shegamalta chesed le'achicha vizulato. Because you provided assistance for your nephew, who he calls his brother, and everybody else. Lahatzil gizulim miyad oshkim. To spare those who were being robbed from the robbers. Man's charge and responsibility is to come to the assistance of others. Not to turn the cheek and say, it's nicht mein Geschäft, it's not my business, I'm not getting involved. Your obligation is to get involved. If you see an injustice taking place, one's responsibility is to react. So from a simple pshat point of view, we saw Rashi, and we know Rashi very well. He's always quoting Midrashim. From a simple pshat, the text has nothing to do with Einish in the punning. It's got to do with facts on the ground. Don't be afraid of revenge. Don't be afraid of using up any of your zechuyo. I'm going to add zechuyo to you. Nothing to Scharcha habei me'od. Why? Because you reacted to people who were being attacked. And you acted, you made a heroic effort to spare them, and that's what a person's responsibility is. Never to allow people who are being attacked, gizulim biyad oshkim. And as a result, that's the simple reading of this particular text. All right, we'll stop here. I wish everybody a healthy summer. And I look hopefully to resume after the summer, right after Yom Tov again. No shir next week. There's a night shir because I can't give it tonight. Yeah.
It's so funny how so many of our English sayings come from these things. Like when he's like, "How are you, Siyadi?" But always my mother wants to say, "So help me God." You know?
Yeah.
And then now this was responsible in that phrase about you are your brother's keeper.
Right. There it is. Exactly.
Are you canceled tonight? Or
no, I'm on. No, tonight I'm canceled.
Tonight,
but next Wednesday night.
Next Wednesday, regular
at the Shalom Vivim Dinner.
So tonight,
regular
time. Right,
yes.
Thank you. Have a good, healthy summer.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing you back. I wanted to ask you.